His book was welcomed by Buddhists, Muslims, Jews, Eastern Orthodox Christianity, Celtic Christians, and Unitarian Universalists. His own religious affiliation, the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope, the head of his church, and the Vatican, however, insisted for writing such radical words that he be silenced. He was called by his own church dangerous, radical, heretical, and a blasphemer. So he was forbidden to speak publicly, to write public and teach for one whole year. In order to remain a Catholic for a period of 1 year, he had to remain silent. He could not speak to anyone for any reason. 1 year later, when he was released from his punishment, he began to work again. He picked up where he had left off. He began teaching, writing, and speaking publicly. His punishment by the Roman Catholic Church made him attractive to more liberal faiths, and he came to the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association and spoke about his ideas. Thomas Berry said of Matthew Fox, "He might well be the most creative, the most comprehensive, and surely the most challenging religious and spiritual speaker of our day in America. He did everything his church asked, yet in 1990, his Dominican order dismissed him. They basically defrocked him. And we might ask ourselves, what belief could possibly be so threatening? What idea could cause the Pope and all of Catholicism to quake in their shoes?" Anyone know the title of the book, 1983, that was published by Matthew Fox? Original Blessing, that's exactly it. You get a star. In this volume, Fox rejects the idea of humanity's innate sin and inevitable punishment in hell. Instead, he proposed a faith based on awe, mysticism, passion, compassion, love, and justice for all people and for the earth. Radical, right? In his new theology, he sought to replace the doctrine of evil, sin, and hell, power over people and all creatures of the earth, with a doctrine of thanksgiving and goodness. You might ask, what could possibly be so dangerous in a religion based upon the belief of gratefulness and goodness? A story. When I became a Unitarian Universalist in 1971, I was explaining our beliefs of goodness, no hell, no sin to a friend. He said, "Why would you be good if there was no hell? Why go to church if you are not earning your way to heaven?" I told him, "I go to church because I want to believe in goodness. I want to be with people who share this belief." He shook his head in disbelief. "If I didn't believe in sin and hell," he said, "I'd give up going to church." Those faiths that believe in sin, hell, and damnation use these ideas to control others. To lose that control is to lose their power over believers. This debate has been going on for years, decades, generations, even eras. Look at our own Unitarian Universalist history. In the late 1700s and 1800s, the fastest growing religion in the United States was Universalism. In contrast to the predominant Christianity of the day, predestination, with an angry God, with its hellfire and damnation, Jonathan Edwards, sinners in the hands of an angry God, he has human beings on the end of a small thread over fires, just waiting to be dropped in. That was the predominant religion of the day in the 1700s and 1800s. That's what people went to church on Sunday morning to hear about, how bad they were. In contrast, Universalism said, God is loving, God is good, God is so good that no one would ever be damned, everyone would be forgiven. Universalism was a balm on suffering souls. In the 1800s, there were nearly 1,000 churches in the Universalist denomination, but they were fast growing, especially in areas with factories and where there were large working class groups. Also, in the late 1700s and 1800s, as the trade ships went in and out of Boston Harbor, a life of relative faith education occurred for the upper middle class of Massachusetts. They also began to question and doubt the power of this angry God. These historical trends gave way to the old joke. The Universalists believed that God was too good to damn them, and the Unitarians believed they were too good to be damned. When we craft a faith based on knots and negativity, what you get is the temptation to do evil. This is very much an Old Testament faithfulness. In the Old Testament, there are rules, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. God is punishing for broken rules. There is Noah's flood. There's Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah. There's Adam and Eve cast out of the garden. Do not eat that apple. Do not eat that apple. And what do? They eat the apple. Another way to look at this difference in belief is this. If I told you in this moment, do not think of pink elephants. Do not think of pink elephants. Don't let pink elephants enter into your mind. What are you thinking of right now? Pink elephants. Negative rules of the Old Testament lead directly to temptation. Do not think of pink elephants. Stop thinking about that. Contrast this to the New Testament. The power of the person of Jesus is the fact that he simplified faith into a positive message. Instead of thou shalt not, he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Think of the other as the same as you and do good. All the stories, all the parables that he tells exist to illustrate a positive message by story and deed. Jesus lives, advocates a positive faith. I believe that Jesus was so unforgettable because of his positive and life-affirming message. So let's contrast angry God, loving God. Thou shalt not, love thy neighbor as thyself, fear, hope, punishment, forgiveness, sin and evil, goodness and gratitude. Which path do you take? If you are here this morning, you have probably wrestled with these thoughts. And if you are here, you probably have come down on the side of goodness and hope and justice and love. You no longer need the pressure of hell and its threat to be good. Nor do you come to church with the idea that it will assure you entry into some life ever after. If you have questioned the angry God, sin and hell, etc., etc., I want to tell you, look around this morning. You're in very good company. Over the years, Matthew Fox's theology has turned into a faith called creation spirituality. Love blossoms into love of self, the other, the earth, and the universe. Now an Episcopalian priest, Fox is called the founder of the green faith, which gave birth to the green movement. How many of us recycle? How many of us pay attention to our relationship to the earth? Well, we can thank the Catholic Church for punishing Matthew Fox. I am extremely grateful, because without that punishment, most of us would not be doing some of the things that we're doing and good for ourselves and the earth. But this morning I want to talk about the latest proponent of faith and goodness. The newest voice in this positive faith perspective is a theologian named Bishop Desmond Tutu. Tutu is an Anglican from South America. Bishop Tutu traveled the world during South Africa's apartheid years, educating, speaking, advocating, proselytizing. All the while, his friend and colleague Nelson Mandela was under arrest for 27 years. Tutu was an ambassador for equality, and while he was traveling the world, he went home, and he was not equal in his own land. When I was a district executive for the UUA in Chicago, our clergy group, the Ministerium of All the Bishops of Chicago, invited Bishop Desmond Tutu to the University of Chicago, and he spoke at Rockefeller Chapel. The chapel was filled to overflowing. People sat in the aisles. They were standing outside the windows. We opened all the windows. There were crowds, six people deep, to hear the goodness and the wisdom of this man. Tutu was impassioned. His own people were being imprisoned and slaughtered. Yet he was positive and buoyant. Sunshine beamed from his face. I wondered, how can this man preach such a positive faith when he is surrounded, when he goes home, by such injustice? His book, published a couple of years ago, entitled Made for Goodness, explains his faithfulness. He says this, "We saw atrocities, but we were constantly being bowed over by the extent to which people were willing to forgive. For those of us who came down on the side of goodness, our faith is tested when human hatred and evil invades our world." Tutu says, "I am no dispassionate observer of the litany of crime and cruelty that assaults us at every turn. For 3 long years, I served as the chair of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, our attempt to cleanse our nation's soul from the evil of apartheid. For days on end, from morning until night, I listened to horrific stories of abuse. I cannot tell you how many times my heart was broken as I listened to the confessions of the perpetrators and the testimonies of the victims." Tutu tells the story of Amy Beale. Perhaps you remember her. A white American college student who went to South Africa as a justice worker, who was killed by 4 young black men as a reaction to white oppression. She was 22 years old. Amy's parents, Linda and Peter, came to South Africa, testified to forgive the 4 men who murdered their daughter, and then they stayed to create bakeries in the poorest sections of South Africa, to create jobs. They did this in memory of their daughter. Yet in the face of such unspeakable evil and good, Tutu's faith grew stronger. He says, "It was as if I was in front of a fire. You don't have to be anything. The fire warms you." The fire he speaks of is a spirit, the divine spirit of goodness. His belief in goodness was strengthened because what he looked for amidst the horror was a fragment, a kernel, a spark of goodness. He says, "We are made for something more. We are made for goodness. We are fundamentally good. When you come to think of it, that's who we are at our core. Why else would we be so outraged by wrong? Our very norm is goodness." He continues, "Each kindness enhances the quality of life. Each cruelty diminishes it." In 1983, Matthew Fox, Dominican priest, theologian, writer, and teacher, published a book. The book advanced a new slant on faith and theology. What he said was a radical notion, apparently, that you and I are good. We are tuned to goodness. This is not to deny evil. It is to face evil squarely. And we can face evil squarely because we know that evil will not have the last word. Evil cannot have the last word because we are programmed. No, we are hardwired for goodness. Kindness builds goodwill. Generosity invites reciprocity. Goodness is not just our impulse, it is our very essence. Goodness changes everything. The way we see the world, the way we see others, and the way we see ourselves. It is our goodness that kept both Tutu and Mandela from breaking during the years of apartheid. They also said belief in goodness let them know that they could face evil with goodness and that eventually goodness would win. I don't know how you feel about what's going on in the world right now, but I need these words desperately. That's why I chose this sermon today. I didn't know it was going to be as bad as it was this week, but my friends were at O'Hare Airport last night, and they managed to free 12 people who were held back by INS. We, as Unitarian Universalists, we have a stake, a claim on goodness. When we experience hatred or evil or injustice, we unite. We strengthen each other, and we let our mutual goodness respond. And we nurture and support each other. Desmond Tutu says we need to give up trying to be good and do good. Instead, he says, we must let our goodness become our very substance. Let it spill out of our mouths, our hands, our hearts, and our minds. For centuries, there have been two views on human being. One sees human beings as sinful and needing to be punished to keep us all in line. Another way says we are good, and our goodness can transform the world. I say, we are called to love from our goodness and to live in our goodness so that all the world might once again become Eden and we don't have to leave the garden. Amen.